Welcome to the Experience Darden podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Trey Tennyson. Trey is a second-year student in our full-time MBA class of 2021, and he is also chair of the UVA Graduate and Professional Council. Trey and I recently connected via Zoom to talk more about his background, his decision to pursue an MBA, how things are going this year, and all the many activities he is involved in across grounds. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is my interview with Trey Tennyson. Trey, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brett.
It's great to have you here. First and foremost, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Just right now settling in on this somewhat overcast day and just, you know, it's a Monday.
Yeah. Are we ready for spring? I'm ready for spring. Are you ready for spring?
Well, I go back and forth. I do love winter. I love just kind of the peace and quiet that winter brings. And I don't mind cold weather, but you know, I do miss the sunshine. So in that respect, I'm looking forward to spring as well.
I know you're a busy person. We're going to get into that here in the podcast. I wonder, what have you been doing to pass the time? It snowed in Charlottesville recently. It's been a little, you know, obviously with the pandemic going, people have a little bit more time at home these days. What have you been doing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I've mostly been, I guess, working. I have a few projects in the pipeline that I'm excited about, both here at Darden and related to Darden, but also working on a few creative projects too. So working on some composing, working on some writing, and getting some headway there. So feeling productive, of course, and you know, and just, I guess, looking forward to that point in time when the world opens up a bit more and we can kind of all get out and have a bit more options of how we spend our day.
Yeah, well, productivity, that's a good feeling right now. I'm glad to hear that for you. So let's get into your story a little bit. We're going to talk about all the things that you're doing and in addition to school, so the second half of the conversation, but let's set the stage a little bit for our listeners. Tell us a bit more about your background. What'd you do before coming to Darden?
Yeah, so before coming to Darden, I guess, you know, born and raised in Richmond, Virginia. So Virginia has been home pretty much my whole life. Went to UVA for undergrad. So, you know, I claim the title of a double who, which I know that we have a good number of us here at Darden. While I was here for undergrad, I did English and religion. And after that, did absolutely nothing with that. So I went straight into teaching instead. I teach with Teacher America in Atlanta, Georgia, where I taught fifth graders for a few years. And then after that, went over to China, where I worked for 4 years as a school director. And then on the corporate side, overseeing franchising for a company of American schools based out of Richmond. After coming back from China, worked in schools for a bit more here in Virginia, but then went to Harvard for my master's ed policy and management. And while I was there, taught a few classes to really, you know, explore the negotiation space and group dynamic space, and had a great time with that. And the logical conclusion after that was to come back home to business school here at Darden, because I think there was, you know, something about just being exposed to the idea of deal making and working with different groups and really driving results that really got to me. But also myself understanding that while I might have this background in the arts and English, that there is a huge gap. I haven't taken a math class since I was maybe about 17 years old. So I really wanted to try to bridge that quant gap a bit more. And I figured that business school would be the best place for that. But knowing that Darden is a very rigorous program that makes sure that students are getting what they need and have the supports there, but also that there are high expectations in terms of what they are expecting for you to perform when you get to the classes. I knew that that would be the program for me to make sure that I was going to get those skills that I needed. And so that got me back here to Darden.
Well, one of the things I think is interesting to consider is sometimes Darden seems a bit like a liberal arts approach to business school, right? You're reading, you're discussing things, you take this general curriculum, and then you have an opportunity to specialize if you want. Do you feel like your English religion background, even though you haven't taken quantitative classes, you know, at least as you mentioned, recent to your enrollment here at Darden, do you feel like having that background in English and religion was helpful to you as you got adjusted to Darden?
Absolutely. I think the one great thing about English and religion and any, I guess, sort of adjacent field like philosophy is it really teaches you how to think, or at least it taught me, you know, how to think, how to break down problems, how to dwell simultaneously in the concrete world of facts and objective reality, which is what we're experiencing every day, but also to be very much at home too in the abstract space where a lot of, you know, creative compulsion and friction and just disparate ideas are finally connected somehow through some sort of alchemy, right? Like that these two worlds are really married in the study of literature, the study of thought, the study of spirituality. And then when you come to a program like Darden, where you are a manager and you're sitting at the head of a business or of an organization, and you're looking at all these different functions and needs and people, and there's so much gray area and so much fluidity in terms of how you can solve a problem, that the ability to really dwell in the space where you have hard fact, but also must dip into this sort of creative bucket and really pull from the abstract to bring it all together is very, I think, very much aided by a background in liberal arts. And I have found that time and time again here, whether it is in a finance class or finance, if you are, you know, if you want to pronounce it that way, which I know that Mark Lipson would probably, you know, give me some side eye if I didn't pronounce it finance. Whether it's a finance class or an econ class, or especially if you're in a business ethics or leading organizations class, right, where these skills and backgrounds are far more salient, this I have found to be a very valuable way of coming to business school and just really kind of really getting to the heart of the story of the problem and figuring out how you can navigate it.
Yeah, I think about so much of the emphasis is, you know, people are looking at same information and you're trying to make a decision with it, but how you explain your decision, the story, the narrative that you construct around decision, you know, that you spend a tremendous amount of time there as a student.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I always believe that communication is at the heart of anything. I mean, you can have amazing ideas, you can have incredible insights, but if you don't have the skill set or the ability or even willingness to take all of what's inside your head and put it in a way where you can articulate it to people that makes sense and is meaningful for them, then those ideas are more or less inert. So you need other people to really sign on, to really get behind you. And in order to do that, you must be able to speak what is in your mind and your heart and place it in the minds and hearts of others and define something that is created from that interaction.
I love so much about what you just said. I'm thinking about you coming, you know, back to business school first year. One of the things we talked about a ton here on the podcast is the adjustment for students, you know, coming back to school, starting at Darden, case method, time management challenges abound. What were some of the learning curves for you as you got started?
Yeah. Well, I will say this. I was, to be very honest, I was a classroom teacher, which of course, you know, as I'm sure folks can imagine, it's a fairly intense job, but I thought I had acclimated. But once I got to my first few weeks of core, I was like, "Wow, I don't know if I was quite prepared for at least the first 2 weeks." And then there's of course the adjustment. But in that, there was a great lesson that I learned, and I think one of my learning teammates actually was the first to really bring this to the forefront. Is that in addition to everything else that we're learning here at Darden, the cases and the skills and the technical abilities, that we're also learning more or less what the most important resource is to any manager, which is their time. And so looking at time, you're in the situation now where you're seeing in many ways the sort of capacity limits of your time, because you can't do everything. You can't be the most social person, killing it at recruiting, and then also being, you know, an A student all simultaneously, unless you just are not sleeping. So you have to be very diligent about where you allocate your time. Is it going to be on these two things? Is it going to be on this one thing primarily? And get used to saying no and committing to that no. And so I think that that was a very important life lesson that's really much embedded in the core in the core process in general, of getting us to a point where we are able to first see our time, own our time, and then stand in as advocates for our time. Because not everything is as deserving of what our time can produce if those things do not necessarily comport with what our objectives are in that moment.
Sort of relentless prioritization. What's the most important thing right now? Such an important executive functioning skill. I mean, because you're going to have to make that choice continuously throughout your career as you're managing people and you're managing, again, your own time.
No, absolutely. And I think the great piece there too, especially with Darden, where you have a number of students who have families, but also you have these social networks that were, of course, you know, pre-COVID were very much robust. And they still are in a virtual sense and in a safe sense, but realizing too that while you have your work, you do have your life beyond the work. And there has to be a healthy balance between saying, here is the energy that I'm going to give my job, which is important, which does provide me the resources that I need to live my life, that does give me the sense of validation and affirmation and joy that I would want from my labor and my effort. And there's also this other very important side too, which is my life beyond work, the things that drive meaning from everything, the things that I'm doing all this for, in many ways to support, is like, I need to now find a way to balance these parts of my life. I need to find ways to say yes to work and also say no to work. And then ways to say, I mean, yes to my life beyond work. And then what does no look like? What does that mean when I say no to life beyond work? I think that Darden does a really good job of really giving you practice with that. It's not always easy. There are often, consequences either way, but we live and we learn and we figure out what that balance is for us. And I think a lot of times it's just a matter of actually doing it and getting to a point where you feel comfortable with what that balance feels like in your life.
So what'd you do this past summer, Trey?
Yeah, this past summer, in terms of my internship, I interned with JP Morgan's private bank in the New York office.
Nice. And what was that like? I imagine, were you still in Charlottesville participating virtually?
Yes. I was in Charlottesville doing it virtually, and it was fantastic. I mean, it was amazing. I love my time there. I mean, the team that was already at the bank, and then also my colleagues who were in my class, and three of whom were also from Darden at that time, was just a very rewarding experience. I give major credit too as well to the JP Morgan team, especially, I'm thinking Carlene Williams and Alex Piku, and others who spent so much time making sure that nothing was lost in this virtual experience. I mean, obviously being in the office would be great, but there was just so much opportunity for connectivity across the bank that, I mean, in many ways, I feel like the virtual setting almost allowed for even more connections and conversations than maybe if we had it been in the office, because you just go from one meeting to the other, right? And so, I give a lot of credit to the team at JP Morgan for really making this summer, exceptional.
So did you come in with a very clear idea? Did you know that's what you wanted to do? And did it evolve over the course of your first year? And has it continued to evolve?
Yes. No, I think that's one thing I love too about being at this point in my life and Darden, is that you're exposed to so many things that probably wouldn't even been on your radar before you got here, and you see how they really fit with who you are and what you want to do. So for example, before I came to business school, I had already made my mind up that the last industry that I would ever get involved with would be banking. and so the irony, of course, is that that is exactly where I ended up. And I think that was in large part due to a number of things. One, at first, I think I was a bit scared off by the numbers before coming into business school. And then once I got into my finance classes and everything, and with my peers and these great professors, really getting a sense that, okay, like, this is actually, deeply interesting. Like there are stories you can tell with numbers, and there are ways you can really, like there's a wizardry behind it. That's exciting in many ways. And so there was that. But then also, the more I interacted with the JP Morgan team, and the more I just saw how much that business was not just on the banking number and investment side, but also on the people, human, client facing side. Like that really connected with me, because so much of my career before coming to business school, was client facing. Right? I'm a classroom teacher. I'm a school director. So I'm working with my quote unquote clients, which are my students and my families, every single day. And so I didn't want to lose that, and seeing that there was a home for that, in this sector that was exciting me, and that also at the highest level possible, with this great firm, was an instant, yes, and then, in the summer was just a fantastic experience that further reinforced that.
Will you be going there after graduation?
So after graduation, I have decided to switch industries, actually. So I'll be going into consulting, and I'll be moving into Washington, D.C. with McKinsey & Company as a full-time associate.
All right. Well, it'll be exciting to have you here in the area. For our listeners who don't know this, I actually am based in D.C. I work out of our Roslyn office, Sands Family Grounds. I get to spend time in Charlottesville, too. So I get to experience the best of both worlds, Trey. It sounds like you'll have a foot in both places, too. So that's wonderful.
That's excellent.
All right. Well, I know, as I've alluded to a couple times here on the podcast thus far, you're a very busy person, and I want to give our listeners a chance to hear a bit more about all the many things that you're involved in. Do you want to share, you know, some of the leadership roles you have at the university, not just at Darden, at the university level?
Sure. So this year, I have the chance to serve as the chair of UVA's Graduate Professional Council, which is comprised of the 12 presidents from the different graduate professional schools, as well as representatives from Honor, UJC, and Student Council. And also, I'm the Graduate Affairs Chair on Student Council. So that gives me a chance to work with, you know, Ellen Yates, the Student Council President, and other folks who are on that council at a undergraduate and graduate professional sort of space. Also, I've had a chance to serve on a number of committees this year, the Fall 2020 Committee looking at how to safely reopen UVA, different interview committees for university personnel. Also looking at graduate education, working on those things too, and even things within Darden, like the Racial Equity Task Force, and other similar types of groups. We're looking to see how we can really begin to expand access and opportunity to all students here at UVA in the community as well. So I just feel very, you know, very fortunate to have the opportunity to give back where I can and to learn. I mean, I will say that, I mean, in addition to the classroom, I mean, this year has been educational all around. I think COVID has a lot to do with that too, just as everyone's adjusting to this new sort of like crisis mode and figuring out how to really solve a problem that is always changing, has been an incredible learning experience. So I'm just very, very thankful for the chance to do so.
I always think that there's so many ways to get involved at Darden, at UVA. It is a place that really prizes student self-governance. We talked about this a bunch here on the podcast. Yeah. What attracted you to this particular role?
Yeah, so I would say a couple of things, actually. One is that I went to UVA for undergrad, and the idea of student self-governance was just off the bat the biggest thing that UVA really holds dear. That students are really the ones who are in charge of charting their own course at the university. And that means that you succeed and you can fail by your own doing. And the university is there to give you support to prevent the failure from happening. But ultimately, it is the result of your effort, your will, your ambition, your ideas, and your networks that can really bring about the results that you wish to see at the university, which is, again, a great analog for going out into the world. So when I came into UVA as a Darden student, I knew that was a space where I really wanted to get back involved in, because, you know, there are so many great things about UVA and the community, but there's always things that we can do better. And I know that I don't have a lens into everything that can be better, but I do feel that one of my skills is that I can listen and then connect those people with the right resources and the right connections in administrations or other student groups across grounds to drive these sort of changes. And that's the role that I really wanted to sit in, was just really giving a voice to people who don't necessarily have the kind of access that could really bring about the changes that they need. So I've loved that, whether it was last year working on H-1B visa advocacy with our peers up at MIT, or, you know, this year looking at childcare. Like, these are things that I would have never even honestly thought about had students not said, hey, here is a problem that's affecting me. What can we do about it? And I think that's one of the great gifts of this role is doing that, and then being able to really then just give people a platform where they can be the leader in that space.
And what a year to be in student leadership. We've talked a bunch on the podcast about the ways that student organizations have been resilient and continue to look for ways to stay engaged. I imagine, you know, hearing you talk about your role as being an advocate for students, You know, in the time of COVID-19 and, you know, thinking about how students' lives have been impacted by this and continuing to, you know, sort of think broadly about the student experience. And you mentioned, you know, sort of the ongoing dialogue around diversity, equity, inclusion that's happening across grounds, including Darden. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done for sure. I imagine it keeps you really busy. How do you figure out what's the most important thing or where to get started?
That's a great question. You know, sometimes the figuring out is less of figuring out and just doing. You know, I think just there's two ways of looking at this. I think there is the what is the most feasible at this point in time, and what is the most urgent, and what is the most important. And sometimes those three questions don't always have the same answer. And when they don't, that's time for a discussion, which is why it's great to have great partners, whether it's on the Grad Affairs Committee or Emma Cronin, who is the vice chair for GPC, and others across the university and all the presidents of GPC. Is, you know, again, I don't have a window into everything that students need, but I do rely very heavily on the people who are around me who can help really brainstorm and strategize where we should be prioritizing our time. I think that there are certain things, for example, like childcare or food insecurity, that will always be consistent issues that must be addressed. And the urgency there is to build a robust structure around those issues that can persist throughout time and gain support, and that there will always be this sort of ongoing train of people who are working on this problem without me even being here, right? And so then there are other things too. Like, for example, we just had a thing at Darden. One of our members on the committee, James Nish, said, hey, like there's no sign on the street at this pedestrian crossing. And, you know, because of the construction, people can't really see. So it's a little dangerous. Can we get a sign there? And so working with facilities here at Darden, as of last Thursday, we sent the email, talked about it with them. And now we got an email this morning that the sign is now out there at Darden. So there's so many different ways, I think, to prioritize the time. Like, what is, like, that's a very feasible thing to do. And we can get that done, you know, in the next 3 days with the great support of the admin here at Darden. And at the same time, you know, there are these other things that are important, but might take a bit more effort to get across the finish line. So I think the important part there is, as I see my role, is to ensure that I am communicating the importance and urgency of each item at all times, especially those ones that have a bit of a longer time horizon that might take a little bit more time to get over the deadline or the finish line, because you want folks to stay engaged. You want folks to see that their work is actually bearing fruit and that there is indeed a space or a place that we're going with that work. And so I find that that's the exciting part, is figuring out that puzzle, because, you know, the ground shifts every day.
Well, let's talk about food insecurity. One of the things that prompted me to reach out to you, and one of the things I love about being on the podcast, is I get to learn about new things all the time. I saw that there was a food pantry effort that was underway, North Grounds Food Pantry, I think is the name of it. What was the inspiration for that, and how is that work going?
Yes. So last year, when I was the chair of Graduate Affairs on Student Council, I was working with the president at the time. Her name was Ellie. And we're looking at, of course, that there are food pantries on Central Grounds and Newcomb Hall, as well as, I think, this one in engineering school, maybe a couple of others. But there was no pantry servicing students on North Grounds. So, and of course, you know, these pantries include food items, nutritious food, but also hygienic products too, that students would need access to as well. So, so last year, had the thought that, well, let's see what we can do to open up a pantry here here at North Grounds, so we can house it at Darden initially, and all students can come and just enter Darden and gain access to it. And so so we did, and it was great. So we launched it first as a pilot to see more or less what the demand would be and what the turnover would be for certain items, so we can know which ones to stock more frequently. But the irony there is that we launched it, I think, literally 3 days before the lockdowns began for COVID. So there was a long period of time between March and, I guess, August, where there was just no use at all of the pantry, which was like, you know, less than ideal, but it did give us a chance to come back in the fall and begin to think about how we can really enhance this service for students. And so that began a conversation with Sarah Elliott and Office of Student Affairs and Susan in the Financial Aid Office and others here around grounds who were just amazing, saying, how can we support this initiative? And so working with a number of folks across Darden and Dean Beardsley too, once he had heard right that there was food insecurity at Darden, even just one student, he really got on board and said, what can we do to really solve this problem? Let's get behind this. So that has now led to where we are now, where Darden has more or less integrated the pantry into, I guess, sort of the official Darden structure. And we've also been able to expand it to include the perishable items for refrigerated items, those kind of things too, where students can sign up and have those items there when they go. I think that the work now, of course, is to build awareness further about this resource, as well as to get a better sense of what students actually want. I mean, the great thing one of our members in the committee last year brought out was that, hey, I mean, we have students from all over the world here. So when we're talking with food items, we just don't just talk, cans of pork and beans or things that Americans might want to eat, like, because that doesn't always fly with every group of students that we have here. So making sure that our selection is as comprehensive of all student groups as possible. And that's been a big part of the work too. So the job now is to make sure that we can fit the needs for the students, as well as to make sure that we can get the word out from here on out.
Thinking about the conversation around food insecurity, and I imagine our listeners hearing this might be a bit surprised to hear that there are students at a university or in a graduate school experiencing food insecurity. Again, one of the great things about the podcast is I think we have an opportunity to highlight some interesting things, some interesting work that's going on grounds to help improve the student experience. Were you surprised by this issue? Was it something you knew something about, and how did it hit your radar?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised by it too much, honestly, because from personal experience, I had experienced this myself in different school programs. I mean, I remember when I was in my program before coming to Darden, I was like, okay, how much can I get for $4 either at like at our school cafeteria, or can I get a Chow's bowl at Chipotle or something? Because I just, coming from being an educator, right, I wasn't coming from a consulting background or a banking background, that I didn't have the resources that I needed to really have consistent healthy food. Like I might have consistent food, but it wasn't always healthy food. And so coming here to UVA, it was no surprise to me at all. I instantly saw the importance of this need, and I saw it in myself still, then as well. And so I think one thing that we have to be very mindful of when it comes to people who are going to graduate school and even MBA programs is that as we get better and better about demonstrating the value of this education and this curriculum and this opportunity, that we're going to begin attracting different types of people from different types of backgrounds. And so you're going to get more folks from nonprofits, more folks from Peace Corps, more folks from Teach for America, more folks who were educators or who don't come from backgrounds where maybe, they're having these wonderfully robust incomes. And so now that they're here and they're providing, incredible insight and value to the classroom learning experience, let's also make sure that they are set up for success and having all of their needs met. And I think that's one of the great things that I love about the work here at UVA and at Darden is that is instantly understood. There's no need to have a second conversation about it. Once you say that, people are like, yes, that makes absolute sense. Let's get fully behind that and make sure it happens. Of course, it's an ongoing conversation as the needs become more apparent, but I think that the will is there, and that is what is crucially important.
I so appreciate so much of what you just said. I mean, I think of Darden as a place that has so much care and regard for the student experience. And yeah. So just having a food pantry, for students who may be experiencing food insecurity, they can come, they can get healthy, nutritious food. That makes perfect sense, given the orientation of the school. How has this effort been received thus far? You mentioned back in March, the timing maybe wasn't so great, but now, maybe a little bit more experience to talk about.
Yeah, it has been received very well. We, I guess, quote unquote, relaunched it maybe about a month or so ago, a few weeks ago, and got a lot of great response from students who were very happy to see that this resource was available. One thing that was actually a really welcome surprise I didn't really think about in the creation of it was a lot of students wanted to donate to it. And I thought that was like a wonderful way to engage the whole community now in this issue. Because we're all at different phases of our lives and in different you know sides of this need. And I think it's again, it speaks to the heart of the folks who are here at this school, you know, rather than saying, oh, I don't need this resource, it's not for me. It's like, oh, I might not necessarily need it, but I do want to leverage whatever I have on behalf of those who might need it. Let me see like what I can do. And so that's been a whole other conversation about how we can really begin to, I guess, account for that particular function of having students donate and provide to the pantry as they see fit.
Well, I wonder, Trey, how has this work, this service that you're doing on behalf of your classmates and other graduate students, I wonder how this has contributed to your overall Darden experience? How has it enhanced, you know, what you've been doing these past couple of years?
Yeah, I think one of the great things about this role and this work and being here at Darden is there is the chance to instantly apply what is being learned. And so, you know, when we're trying to solve problems, we're trying to think about how best to strategize for getting certain things done. We're trying to build connections and networks and across the university or community or wherever is it's all very educational. So, you know, there's a chance to work with students and to help in whatever way we can, but there's also the chance to continue learning and to see, okay, how does it feel when I do this? How does it feel like when I say things this way? Does that sound genuine like me? Does it not? Is it connecting with people? Is it getting the work over the finish line? And if not, how can we kind of revisit it? So I would say that's one of the hallmarks, again, of UVA, is that student self-governance is such a highlight of the school as a whole, because the very things that you're doing in your organizations, whether it is the graduate council, student council, whether it is Pride at Darden, whether it is BBSA, you know, like whether it is, you know, like GWIB, whatever organization you're part of, whatever you're doing there is in many ways a reflection of what you might be doing at your job post Darden. You're going to be working with people who are highly motivated, highly driven, very intelligent, you know, who have very strong, well-developed ideas. And you must also collaborate and strategize and work together to actually create something collectively that is a benefit, not just to you personally, but to the group and to the community as a whole. And that type of importance placed on students doing this themselves very much hands-off, and the admin's here to support, but they're not telling you what to do, is an incredible way to gain that confidence, to really feel what your voice is, to really try new skills in a fairly safe environment. So when you get to your job and your career and your life's work beyond Darden, you're far better equipped to do these things in the real world with the confidence that, yes, I can, because I have.
So much of what you just shared, I mean, it's at least in my mind how I've ordered this, like the organizations and all this become a way of practicing so much and build, you know, continuing to foster and sort of build these skills, this, you know, skill set that you showed up with, that you've been practicing in class. Now you're practicing it at the student organization and you're going to carry that into your career. I wonder, here you are, you know, second semester of your last year here at Darden. What are you looking forward to, Trey? What's on your bucket list, so to speak, with graduation on the horizon?
Yeah, I would say the things that I am most looking forward to, if I had a bucket list, the thing at the top of it would be childcare here at UVA.
I can understand that. I mean, I just listening to you talk about, you know, sort of advocating and sort of being a voice for students, it seems like, based upon just even our conversation before getting started here and conversation here on the podcast, this is something that students have brought to you, and you know, you're having those conversations. You know, I know it's early in terms of, you know, engaging around that issue. How's it going?
Yeah, it's been going well. One thing, there is a lot of interest and motivation that we've also found, not just in students, but also in university administrators. So again, like this was an issue that coming into Darden was nowhere on my radar because, you know, it doesn't impact me directly. I'm not a parent. But Kat Jorgensen, who was a student in my section, Section A, go Lions, here at Darden, she is a parent and she brought this to my attention for the first time. And ever since then, it's like, oh, this makes absolute sense, right? Like this helps. If we were to provide childcare to students at UVA, all students who have the need, then that makes UVA more competitive, but also a more equitable place because we're giving students the things they need to succeed on the same level as their peers who do not have children. You know, because one of the things I found too is that a lot of students with children are a bit capacity constrained in different ways because they're not just providing for, you know, the well-being of themselves and others in their home, but they're also, you know, providing for the health insurance that they are, you know, like in many ways required to pay unless they have Medicaid, Medicare. And that can run up costs. And so I think this idea is what can we do as a community, as a university, to really step in the gap and help these students, especially in the pandemic where we're seeing that people have their kids at home and we love our kids. I was a teacher. I love the kids that I taught, you know, but when you're trying to do your work and you're trying to be successful in your classes and to attend classes and to do your readings while also maintaining the happiness and well-being of, you know, like a child or maybe more than one child, it can become challenging, especially if your partner is also working. And so I think that finding ways to really provide this provision for students would go a long way in attracting even more talent to university and also allowing those students who are here currently to have the chance to work in a way that is, I'll say, as optimal as possible.
When I think about the Darden learning experience, Trey, I think about students trying to put themselves in others' shoes, other people's perspectives, understand a problem from someone else's point of view. It sounds like that's what you do in your role, not just in class, but also in your role here as sort of in this leadership role.
I think that's very important. I think especially just coming from the different identities that I occupy myself, whether it's along the lines of, like race and, you know, like LGBTQ and all those things as well. I think growing up with that, it's very easy to recognize how certain perspectives and needs oftentimes get shut out of the conversation or are discounted, you know, by those who are kind of in many ways dominating the conversation. And so I found that the more I've been able to gain influence and the more I've been able to even have just like positional authority in any situation or organization, that is a prime opportunity to begin to leverage those lessons from my own life and how that felt, and then to expand that access to those voices that are not thrumming in places of influence. And because they should, because no matter what, we have the ability to do things for people. And if we have the ability, the will must also be there. And so like, let's get the will to where it needs to be to make the sort of changes that need to happen so that we are all happy, taken care of, and on the path to success.
Trey, I got one last question for you.
Yeah, please.
And it's from an English major. I'm an English major. You're an English major. I ask grad students this all the time. Are you still finding some time for reading?
Well, yeah, actually, great you asked that because I'm in the class right now with Ed Freeman, and it's called Business Ethics and Literature. So all we do every week is we read a whole novel. And that's for our Wednesday class. And then for Thursday, we're reading short stories. This week, though, we're reading it's poetry. And I love that because this is allowing me to really, really dig into that literary, you know, bone. If that's a very stark image, but to really get to that point. And also it's Ed Freeman, you know, he's a legend, he's hilarious, he's incredible. And just the way that he can really nurture a conversation in class is, you know, you don't have to be a lit major to really dive in and love the class. I mean, it's just incredible. So we're doing readings, and then also on our Thursday classes, we're doing workshops. So last week, for example, we wrote a play in about 20 minutes, and it's like a lot of free writing. And I think one of the great things that I love seeing is you know, like people who are maybe really engaging with their creative side in this way for the first time. And they're talking about all of the different connections and the gifts and the really strange sensations that are happening like in their mind as they're doing these exercises. And I'm like, that's awesome, right? Like that is, you know, like what we all should be getting. Like my sensation that was strange to me was thinking about numbers in certain ways, you know, and so for others, it might be thinking about characters and creativity in certain ways. So I love that we're all here at Darden able to really get pushed and challenged and stretched in the ways that are going to make us far more able and far more nimble and far more effective and powerful in our cause once we graduate.
Well, Trey, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out for the podcast. As we noted at the outset, you're someone that has a lot on your plate, and it's been great catching up with you. So enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for everything you're doing on behalf of graduate students and students at the university, and stay safe.
No, thanks so much, Brett. This has been great. Thank you so much.
And that was my interview with Trey Tennyson, a second-year student in our full-time MBA class of 2021. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, at virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.